never managed it, not once.
Okay, that's us live now. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If you're listening live, this is John Johnson on Radio Edgy Talk. I'm joined, as usual, by David Noble, who is over in Dalgetty Bay in Fife. And this week we're just dead excited because we've got Matthew Boyle and Stephen Rogers from Inside Learning, which is, I actually think, probably the longest running educational podcast in the UK anyway. Matthew, is that...
These are heady claims, John. Yes, heady, sir. Indeed. nice to be with you, John. Really, really excited about tonight's join-up. Thank you very much for coming up with this great idea.
Yeah, well, as I said earlier, I'm not actually sure I came up with any idea. Just, I'm a listener to your show, and at some point, I think we tweeted back and forward, and the idea came up. I'm not sure if you maybe invited us on the show, and then we suggested we did it as a joint, which seems
yeah,
a good idea.
I think so. Yeah, again, you've made the night for Steve and I, because you've used that word again, show, and that really gets to the heart of one of the things that we'll be talking about tonight, doesn't it? You know, is this a service to teachers or is it a show? But we'll come back to that later.
There's a producer waving at me through the glass screen right now.
It's a something, and I think that's what we'll be talking about tonight, and try and get an idea about podcasting and education.
Yeah, it's a fantastic topic. Steve and I have done, I don't know if we're the longest UK podcast, but we're certainly in pretty early on. I reckon overall we're probably kicking on for about 200 or so podcasts, not all of them available online anymore, and we've never had the chance to do this. We've never had the chance to just talk about podcasting. So I'm particularly excited about this tonight.
Okay. So maybe you could start off by just giving us a background of where Inside Learning came from. Maybe a bit about who you are as well, you and yourself and Steve.
Mm. Sure. Steve, do you want to kick off there?
Okay. Well, I remember Matthew and I used to do conferences together way back when. I was director of... an English educational charity called the University of the First Age, and we used to get invited round to various local authorities to spread pearls of wisdom as we saw. When we were sat over dinner, and it was Matthew's really the kind of the generator of the idea, and he said, I think there's a real pressing need to do something more innovative around talking about educational ideas. I've just got into this podcasting thing, so it came about after a dinner, didn't it, Matthew?
It did, yeah. Watched you a wee bit at the start of that. I don't know if the guys had the drop out there as well, but I think we got the flavour of that. Yeah, it was a dinner, actually. I think we were there the night before a conference, weren't we, somewhere?
That's right, yes.
Somerset. Bristol, perhaps? Yes. Rings a bell?
Somerset. Taunton,
was
Somerset.
It Somerset? Oh, yeah.
Remember the occasion well, yes.
So there we were with a candle-lit dinner between us, gazing into each other's eyes, thinking, this is crap, we better talk about podcasting instead. but actually, the other big thing, to be serious, is that Steve and I were really motivated about the fact that we're learning from each other. The English system and the Scottish system are so diverse, really. There's so much to learn from each other. My view has always been that the Scottish system is generally good, but very uniform, and the recent report, of course, on by diverse means, I think, has kind of echoed that. That we have a good standard, but not enough variety to learn from ourselves. And even then, that's a long time ago now. And I guess Steve and I can see that there was huge learning from each other's sides of the border. So that was an overt purpose right away of Inside Learning, was to stop looking at Finland and Singapore, but actually to reach out across the simple border between us and say hi properly.
Yeah, that's right. I think the other thing as well was because we both had such diverse backgrounds in education. I've been a teacher, I've been a deputy and an acting head teacher for a while, and then worked in a charity, and I've worked across all sectors, and Matthew had a wide experience in various educational roles, and I'd also had some policy experience, so we just felt that between us we got that actually there was a lot to share in terms of just drawing on our experience.
Plus, truthfully, no one else would ever talk to us, so we figured there was an actual an actual need to be fulfilled there.
Absolutely.
So what's the EduTalk story?
Well, I think way before that, David was a very early podcaster as well with Burich, which I can't remember. That must have ran a good few years, David, yeah?
Well, you're going back to 2005. I mean, I started doing the Burich site. It was a weekly podcast that I used to do myself, and it kind of snowballed, and eventually that you can trace it right through to today and Radio EduTalk. But for me, it was an opportunity just to reflect, I think, and you know, you could say it's in an innovative way, but just like in a non-text way, I suppose, on my practice. And I really started out doing it as part of my work towards becoming a chartered teacher. So I thought, you know, if I'm going to reflect on my practice, I might as well do it a different way and maybe share it online. And suddenly you have people listening in, and it always kind of had a tech focus, or it kind of focused on the three or four projects that I had running at the time for my chartered teachers and my master's studies. But of course, I don't know if you want to say something, Jordan, about the fantastic work you were doing at the same time over at Sandy Primary.
Well, I fell into podcasting because I had started a website for my kids in my class, or it was meant to be a school website, but it didn't really have an awful lot of information about the school. It was mostly what the pupils were putting on, and it just because the children had done some homework, which involved looking out of their room and writing about what they saw, looking out their window, and it was called out my window, and they brought back all this writing that I thought was really great, and I decided I would record it and put it on the website. And I didn't know anything about this at that time, so I think we had a masterclass laptop at the time, and whatever the Windows recorder was, and I found I could only actually record a minute of audio because I didn't know what I was doing, and we recorded all these minute sections of audio and I put them on the website. And at the same time I heard about this podcasting thing that just happened, and I thought, that sounds awful complicated, it'll be a fad, and nothing will come of that. And obviously a couple of months later I realised, oh, it's a really good idea, and we started doing wee regular shows, which we did for a year or two, maybe 3 years, just every month, and it was really the children just putting it together, and it was, they chose the topics, and it was kind of like a magazine show.
Fantastic. To my shame, I've never heard that show. I certainly used to listen occasionally to Burich. That was one that, to my shame, David, we're all busy, and I guess we have to put up our hands to being selective. But you know, when I spotted someone that I was interested in, I would listen to that. But are these podcasts that you did in school still online, John?
They're still. I mean, I've left the school now. They're still sitting there. Unfortunately, lots of things about the school website have crumbled a bit. Mostly due to it being put together with sealant wax and string at the time, but yeah, I think the audio is still there. We've lost a lot of the comments because the commenting system we used was I can't remember, it was one free system that you plugged into your website, and that's a real shame because some of the comments to the children were fantastic and very motivational to the kids. Just people
you,
from
John, you really prided yourself on that, didn't you? It was, there had to be some kind of interaction, or you were always pushing for interaction. I think it went kind of transatlantic as well at one point.
Well, the idea was to give the children an audience to make something real, and I think I still really am very keen to encourage people to podcast with pupils and turn it into a proper podcast with a series, so that it's regular, so that people subscribe, and so that they do build up an audience. I remember we got a comment from an American, I think he was actually a teacher, but he said to the kids, I had to stop the car because we were laughing so much at the podcast. And just for children to get that kind of feedback to something that they enjoyed doing and they were putting out for fun,
absolutely,
I think it's just really nice. And apart from a few, I mean, initially it was difficult to do a podcast. I remember, I think, knitting RSS feeds by hand.
impressed that you can do that. I tried that a few times and gave in, I have to say.
Yeah, but I mean, it, nowadays the tools are out there that it is reasonably easy to set up and run a podcast. So and it ticks so many boxes in the curriculum for excellence, for instance, because a podcast can be about anything. So that's one of the things I'm really interested in. And then we started EduTalk, and I think David got in touch with me and said he'd be really interested in doing some sort of podcast project. Mm-hmm. And we could.
Did you know each other beforehand?
Well, we did. I mean, we would know each other best through our work with Teach Meets, particularly maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. I don't know whether we'd be regarded as one of the kind of original Teach Meeters. I know John.
I was just going to say, you guys were right in at the start of that.
I think I maybe came in the second one, but I don't know if I'm correct there, John. But yeah, it goes right back to that. And I think following through to EduTalk, it was the Scottish Learning Festival. I think we established before the show started tonight. It was 2009, and you know, been kicking about with Teach Meets tonight. We wanted to try something different and maybe create more content around the Scottish Learning Festival, and I think we just went about, oh, it would have been the early days then, but using particularly John's blog as well, just saying to folk, you know, if you're going to the Scottish Learning Festival, just think about recording something on your mobile device. I think that was the first year where we really thought that we could, instead of kind of setting up or pre-recording audio sitting at a laptop or a desktop computer, that, you know, we could actually start doing this on the go. So we asked people, we put calling cards just out in sessions at Scottish Learning Festival in various rooms, just asking people to, you know, dial, I think it was a Gabcast number or something like that, and just record some. And I think over the 2 days, and I mean, I was only there the one day, but I think it was something like 27 pieces of audio got phoned in or emailed in from people who were kind of in the field, who were there in the day, and they were interviewing each other, and they were interviewing or having a chat, just recording a chat with vendors. And we just thought, I think from that point we thought we could really link this new project to just kind of notions of recording on the go, and therefore recording so many different types of audio.
That's very much a feature of EduTalk that we've never really managed. I think we've only occasionally eclipsed, Steve, but you know, you guys very much more reflect the kind of current events in Scottish education by picking up, you know, real snippets of them. It's a real positive feature.
Well, I think we quite like the idea of providing at Scottish Learning Festival sort of alternative to the official voice, I think David found Gabcast, which is unfortunately no longer with us, but what was great about Gabcast is you just give people a telephone number that you can do actually off an old dial phone, and they just dialed in and records it, and it had an RSS feed, and we could combine that then with the other inputs from Audioboo and things like that into one podcast. And it just made, the idea was to make it really easy for people, give them lots of different ways to do this. I think that was that actual first one was the one we got, you know, in such a short space of time, because it's 2 days with 28 pieces of audio, and it was all sorts of people. It was newly qualified teachers and senior HMIE and everything in between, giving their top and worth, you know.
Oh, it's really incredible. We obviously tapped into something there. I suppose now that we get the story of how Steve and I managed to find a friend, and how you guys managed to go from being individual criminal masterminds to a gang, I suppose the kind of first obvious thing I'm dying to ask you is, how do you see the place of podcasting in UK education? It was an interesting throwaway you said there about it being one of the older podcasts. You know, I guess we're both pretty much in that place. But where do you see this going? Because, you know, there's a sense, I think, that we've come through a period of huge excitement about blogs and wikis. You know, probably the last 5 years we've seen an explosion of that. I'm starting to sense that things are settling down now, and things have found a kind of a niche level. Is that your sense as well?
David, do you want to go for that one?
I'm a master, you'll find, of the tumbleweed question, incidentally.
Matthew, John, I would imagine John's getting fed up with me going on about it, but I kind of agree with you there, and I would put put even Twitter in there as well. I think that they've found a place. I keep going on about the fact that I don't think we can keep forcing social media and such like. I'm not saying that anybody's doing it in a particularly nasty way, but you know, a lot of people are still going on about social media and you should be trying this aspect and that aspect. And you know, people, I think many teachers in Scotland have, you know, been through in service, or they've maybe dabbled a bit or what have you. And you know, for me, if it's not happening, it's the autonomy of the teacher. My assumption is they've all had a go at it, and if it's worked for them and it's worked for their young people, then they'll keep using it. And yeah, you know, that was the case with Joining Podcast, and it was phenomenally successful. But for other reasons, you know, network issues and just maybe the culture within a school, for other people who've maybe tried it and moved on. And I'm very comfortable with that. And I just get a wee bit kind of suspicious when people keep going on about, you know, that this is a game changer or what have you. I think it has been for some people, but many other educational developments will also have made an impact in schools up and down the country and teachers' practice, and they won't have anything to do with technology. It was interesting just on the issue of Twitter, and I might be wrong with this, but in all the kind of literature for the Scottish Language Festival this year in September, they seem to have dropped all mention of hashtags and such like. So I'm maybe reading too much into that, but I think it's very important, you know, they come back to the early days. And I've seen on Twitter recently quite a number of people kind of reminiscing about the good old days, maybe 2004, 2006 or something. I mean, it changed my life, and the blogging of you and Macintosh, and the podcast that John, the blogging, you know, I would say John's the finest educational blogger in Scotland. I mean, I don't know how prolific he is, these guys have had a massive impact on not only my practice but my life. But yeah, I think things have settled down. I don't know whether this issues, shall we say, the glow, have maybe put people off. But you know, in my role just now in a school as acting head, technology is one very small part of my work, and I love it to bits. But there's so many other aspects to working as a teacher.
No, but I mean, that's an interesting point. As you said, it's just one interesting aspect, which draws you back to the notion, your use of the term radio. And I often think of our podcast as more of akin to a radio show. It's just that we've not cracked the technology from the ham life, and also we're probably too obviously disorganised, aren't we, Matthew? We're not totally disorganised, but I think radio might be pushing on.
Well, if anyone listened to us last week, they'll hear us apologising, because we actually managed to lose two guests in a row because we mistimed the, you know, the dates we put online. We're not the most organised, there's no question. They're being a reasonably accomplished guys.
Yeah,
but we really could do with some of the organisers.
That's right. But I mean, my point being that I suppose I kind of envision the podcast as more like a radio show, and that people who are interested in current affairs or talking about education would be able to download it and listen to it in the car or whatever, and have the same sort of stimulation. I mean, we did want to go for the sort of more interactive media aspect of it, but we've not really pushed it, have we, Matthew? And for some reason, it's, you know, apart from the sort of, we've got a core of guests who will come back to us, a core of listeners who will come back to us, but we know we've got a huge amount of listeners out there that we don't know who they are.
Particularly, disclosure, at our peak a few months ago, we were managing to come very close to 3,000 downloads a month. And at the moment, it's dropped back down to, well, we've actually seen a dip. It's interesting, over the last 2 or 3 months. We're not sure whether that's a reporting error in our software or whether it's a genuine, you know, a sort of dropping off of interest in podcasting. But it's sitting more like the sort of 2.4, 2.5 at the moment. See that trend starting to go up again, and it's all got a bit difficult to explain. But it gives you a sense of the kind of quantity, given that that's monthly. You know, that might translate to, you know, to the fact that there are maybe 600 or 700 people, if we're lucky, you know, out there. We certainly know that probably only about half of those are in the UK, as most of the browsers report the location, don't we? And the occasional analysis would seem to suggest that we've got probably the largest other chunk from the States. And actually, a lot of Chinese listeners, strangely enough. Yeah,
do you and Stephen actively promote the podcast? I mean, I would imagine it's a lot of effort to be able to put shows out every week or so. Do you get a chance to actually come up with a strategy or try things out to increase listenership?
No, we've not been. We have the occasional, let's have a phone call, you know. And Natty and I will spend hours on the phone talking strategy, and then we kind of. but it's interesting because sometimes we think, oh, you know, it's Wednesday evening, we've got to put a podcast out. But afterwards, I mean, we just find it very therapeutic, don't we, Matthew?
We do, yeah. I think we give you high, yeah.
And, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think we've been successful in doing that. I mean, for a long time, we talked about our ambition to make it a big podcast, because the truth is we enjoy it a great deal, David, and we get an enormous kick from it. And I have to say, I come at this as a podcast listener, not just as an educator. I actually now listen to more podcasts than I do radio shows, or even for that matter, music, and I'm a great music fan. So I wanted to be part of that. You know, I wanted the excitement of producing something that would inspire people and entertain them. I think for me that was important as well, that we shouldn't be too poor-faced, you know, that people should enjoy listening because they would laugh or get angry or whatever as well with us, rather than just, you know, set out to be purely informative. But to make that happen, we've talked about doing things like, you know, doing poster drops in teacher training institutions. We've had occasional Twitter flurries. We set up it was Jay who was with us. He was our third man in our second outing from the start, and he brought a lot of enthusiasm and bushy-tailed gung-ho to us. But none of these things have been pursued, because the truth is that, you know, Steve and I both don't find the time. You guys will be the same. You know, we're all people that are doing full-time jobs, often with other things, never mind the job taking up our time. And my view is that we could probably really increase our listenership, and we could probably get better feedback and act on it and become a slicker operation. But we probably need a structure behind this. You actually need people to, you know, to do the phoning and organising of guests and putting out the publicity and the, you know, just literally the mail lists and things. And I've always hung on to the idea that if we could ever take it more seriously, that is the way to go. I don't think that there are millions of people out there waiting to have a Scottish educational podcast, but I'm convinced that there are probably significantly more than we're grabbing at the moment.
Yeah. I could just ask you about iTunes. There's kind of two things here. You're saying about your kind of consumer podcast. What's it like out there in terms of educational podcasts? And I checked iTunes store recently, and, you know, Mark Pendleton's works are still well up the charts. But again, going back to like 2006, I was reviewing educational podcasts, and there just seemed to be so much out there. And is that something that's found its level, or is it still increasing? And is iTunes, as a bit of software, is that still important to podcast producers and consumers, or have we moved on to kind of just website-only downloads and, you know, just going direct to home pages?
It's an interesting point. It's an interesting point. I mean, The Guardian, do you remember a couple of years back, Matthew, The Guardian did, The Guardian Education did a bit on it, podcasted, didn't they? And we were up there as one of the top educational podcasts. So,
yeah, that's we were kind of said, 600 a month or something, so how they come up with that?
I know, exactly. They said it doesn't say much for the state of educational podcasting in England. Coming back to the point being, I think there was a real flurry of interest in people.
Well, let that England rather than UK go, Steve.
They were talking about the English scene, etc. But there was a kind of whole flurry of interest when people like Future Lab and Bechtel were strong in England and supporting that kind of new ICT in schools and education, and Stephen, I forget his name now.
Heppel?
Stephen Heppel, yes. I mean, he had a big podcast going, didn't he? Which I don't think he's. I don't know if he's.
I don't think he got many episodes out, but
no, yeah. No. So there was that kind of flurry, and then, as you say, it kind of settled down. So we don't get it. And then iTunes, we put the stream on iTunes, don't we? And people, I suppose, can subscribe through there. And then I've been a bit put off iTunes lately. Sorry, I'm just going off on one now, but they've radically messed around with their interface, so it'll be interesting to see if the competition catches up.
I think there's another factor there, which is that iTunes at one time was the only show in town, wasn't it? You know, if you wanted to get a podcast, you had to be there. But there's a lot of podcatching software now that actually creates its own feeds. So, for example, I use Dogcatcher on my Android phone, and if I just do a search on it for a podcast that at the end of what I'm interested in, it will first of all go through its own lookup tables of feeds, which are pretty, you know, pretty large lists of some of the major podcasts, and then if that fails, it then offers you a Google search, and it seems to intelligently, you know, take you to the RSS link anyway within it. So I think more and more there's an intelligence within the software that means you can begin to look beyond iTunes.
Yeah, I think it's probably time that we did some sort of more education of educators about subscribing and listening to podcasts. I think mobile technology is certainly, I mean, I use it for an iPhone, and I use an application called Instacast, which will automatically queue up and download. It does the whole thing, and it does the same discovery. And I think there's an awful lot of educators sitting out there with phones in their pocket that are quite capable of this, and a commute. Yeah. And I think that's the thing to get over about podcasting, is that it's not television. It's not reading. You don't have to settle down to really pay attention. You can do wash the dishes or drive the car, and it's a really valuable resource, because if you listen to a podcast on the way home in the car and you hear one interesting thing, well, that's a bonus, because you would just be listening to you know.
My colleagues, for example, in our Gang and Beauty area, you know, on average, all of them spend hours a week in the car. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason why they couldn't be listening to podcasts. Yeah. I'm not suggesting they all should, but you're right. I'm not sure that many of them actually consider it as a high quality option. But that does take us to another issue that we have to be quite quite frank about, and that's the quality of podcasts are very varied. You know, as I used to do in the early days of podcasting, and listen to lots of things from iTunes, particularly school ones, you know, when various schools would be putting out their own feed. I think if we're really honest, we'd have to say that although it's something that we wanted to encourage and that we should rightly be excited about, it's very unlikely that any educators were going to be hooked and want to subscribe endlessly to too many of those. And there's a sense that, you know that idea of the long tail, you know, the internet is now making available the idea that we can have 1,000 flowers blooming and that there'll be an audience for all of us, you know. I don't think it's like that. I think what we're realising now is it's more like Highlander, you know, in the end there will be only one. I don't believe that's true, because there's always a place for a niche, but I don't think it's a true long tail in UK podcasting. I think there's room for a few good podcasts. There's another film title there coming in, Steve, if I'm not careful. And the difficulty is for it to shake down into those few good podcasts and to figure out what it is that we need. And I think that the niche ones will be school ones, you know, because there will always be a local community, and sometimes an international community, you know, around something exciting that's been done in a school. But if we're honest, there aren't many schools that are going to become, you know, even the number 10 UK podcast in the future. Well, they'll have a place, though.
Maybe there are a couple of questions that relate to this that are going on Twitter at the moment, but we'll get to them in a minute. Maybe one of the things I always like is Stephen Downes, who must be one of the most read online educators in the world, does internet radio, and his point is that quite often he will be having no listeners, and it's the process for himself that he enjoys. And it's valuable with a, you know, even with a very small audience, it's still valuable.
Yeah, and I think just to capture that, you're quite right, and it's something that I hope to go with this, that there are two purposes to podcasting. There's one kind of end of the scale, which is the sort of entertainment and learning, more like a facsimile of what the likes of Radio 4 would have done in their podcast, like The Learning Curve. Mm-hmm. But at the other end, it's personal and professional development, isn't it?
Mm.
Sorry, John, I didn't mean to ruin your flow. I was just
that's okay.
Capturing what I'm thinking.
I don't actually have a flow, I think, which is one of the interesting things.
But I think one of the difficulties, and I was going to ask you about that, is it is trying to, because we don't have a picture of our audience, so we do things that interest us, and hopefully there's enough people out there who are similarly interested. So we could cover a whole range of general topics, and we never know whether that's appealing to listeners, and because we always tend to think of education as one sort of practice, but it actually is a whole set of very different practices, isn't it? And we've got a whole set of very different audiences, you know, so we don't often tackle really nitty-gritty pedagogical stuff, for example. So I guess there may be a lot of busy teachers who might think, oh, well, you know, I might take in your program, but I won't listen to it regularly. I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you get a kind of a sense of your audience and how you might sculpt your future around it?
That's a question Ian Guest has just put out on Twitter. He says, wonder how or even if you can monitor what your audience is, or perhaps more importantly, what effect you have on listeners. And I don't think we really do. I mean, we can see on Twitter sometimes people will ask questions like Ian's doing, so we know there's a listener out there, but we don't really know how many people listen live. Live listening to something live is a real minority sport compared to listening to a podcast, and there's not that many people listen to podcasts, so it's hard. But at a conference last week, I met a head teacher from England who had met previously a wee while ago, and he said, oh, I've been listening to your radio show, and I didn't know that. And he said, I tell my staff to listen to it.
That's brilliant.
But I didn't know that. So these folk are maybe out there. Maybe we could, and again, it's down to the time factor. You guys were talking about how much time we've got to do things. Maybe we could figure out better practices. But I think maybe the more interesting thing is following what you really enjoy. Mm-hmm. Probably a curriculum for excellence thing, follow your own interests, you know, personalise it, have our choice. Because what always surprises me is that most of the people we have on are organised by David. And quite often the folk who I have little knowledge, or that some of them are fairly academic, and I'm always astonished at how I can get really interested in what they're talking about, and I think teachers can as well. They just love to talk about what they're doing. Again, I was talking this week to a teacher who went along to her first Teach Meet last week or 2 weeks ago. She went along to the one I was away on holiday, but she went along, and she just said that it was great, you know. I could talk to people, and I knew we were there to talk about, you know, teaching and learning, and you know, I didn't need to worry about boring them. And she was just really excited having discovered that. So I think we've got an audience, and probably without a great deal of effort, the best way to keep it is just to follow the flow. I mean, quite often you guys are talking about English education, or Mr. Gove. I don't know a whole lot about English education, but I really enjoy listening to you folk, and it feeds into other things. It makes me think about what we do here and what I do differently. I just think the idea of doing what you enjoy probably makes a better show than trying to analyse and figure out exactly how to improve your audience.
I think that's the only way you can really proceed. You know, over the summer again, I'll be kind of working and getting some listeners, and you know, looking into academia and abroad and what's going on. You know, great stuff that seems to be going on in classrooms in Scotland. And trying to pull folk in, but even just the simple fact that people are not always available, you know, so you're not going to get a run of guests that will kind of fit together and neatly into themes and such like. So, I mean, I remember with Stephen Heppel, we grabbed him in a platform waiting for a train, and some part of Yorkshire or something like that, and it's like that kind of serendipity as well. If somebody's in a conference and they're a renowned speaker, you might just get that one chance to hook them in live or we do pre-recorded shows as well.
See, that's an enviable level of energy expenditure, Steve. You know, I've never managed that. I really am impressed with that. You know, it is why your guest list has been a bit of a who's who. You know, there's no doubt when you pull in.
But it is a hobby, Matthew. That, you know, ultimately, there's no doubt about it. I mean, Ian in Sheffield and Twitter's talking about, you know, wondering why folk don't use them as use these kind of shows or whatever they call them as personal or professional development. And you know, I just don't regard it. That's for people to reach that conclusion. You know, we've got teachers up in Shetland that listen regularly to the shows and interact, and you know, if they're putting that down for a CPD log or what have you, that's absolutely fantastic, and that just means the world to me. But I'm never going to say to somebody, oh, you should listen to our shows because you know it's fantastic professional development, because I think you then start to take yourself down a line about maybe then getting to quality control, because somebody could come back to you and say, oh no, that was factually incorrect, or you know, it crashed for the first 10 minutes. I mean, John and I still chuckle at the number of technical problems that we have regularly. So I hate to think somebody was coming by and saying, well, our quality improvement officer and our council was saying we should be listening to this, but you know, it's frankly just not good enough quality. So I just absolutely love doing it. Looking forward to the break over the summer to recharge and try and get some inspiration.
See, for Steve and I, that would be a break to recharge, whereas you will be a break to recharge and line up another 20 top quality guests.
Well,
I'm very impressed.
Hopefully. I mean, it's a bit cheeky in a sense, but even just the kind of longevity of the show, you know, we've got a lot of kind of fairly standard emails that we can fire out to folk, you know, given a bit of background. So, you know, if you get somebody's email address or an inkling that somebody would be up for maybe talking about a report that they've written for the government or what have you, it's not difficult just to get an email together and personalise it a little bit and get it out to them. So it doesn't take masses of effort.
Actually, I'm feeling a bit ashamed here, because I seem to remember receiving one of your emails once.
Have you not replied?
I still meant to reply, but it was quite a complex email. It specified times and themes to be arranged in advance, and I never quite got around to it.
Shamed on live radio.
Just
going back to something you said about professional development, and I think that's one of the things that Matthew and I think quite consciously wanted to avoid, this notion of, you know, professional development. It sounds so technical, blah blah blah, doesn't it? When actually education is at the bottom, at the heart of it, it's about learning, it's about passion and enthusiasm. And if you're enthused and passionate, then hopefully there's somebody out there equally kind of enthused, might say, oh, yeah, that might run with that, or that set me thinking in a different way. But the notion that this kind of notion of professional development, as you say, you can take a sort of package which will probably have a million bullet points in, and then you can deliver it to somebody. Have you guys watched The Wire?
Yeah.
Do you remember series? Do you remember series 4?
Education. Yeah.
They kind of went. They all sat there. And the what's that woman delivering that? Consultants delivering. I'd recommend people go and watch series 4 of The Wire. Yeah.
Every single series. Yes. Best thing on television for.
Yeah.
Since I grew up. I think.
Anyway, my point being that, you know, we're not consultants, we're not delivering a package of bullet points, we're not delivering mantras, you know, we're just trying to enthuse people and get people thinking.
Yeah. I think the other thing there, though, is that it's always true that working on your hobbies and trying to make them something that you share is good enough reason. But it's probably also no bad thing to have production values. And I say that, you know, smilingly, because I know that we fall so far short of what we would love to be able to do. We have had so many technical blunders as well, and even, I don't know if you guys have done the thing when you finish a conversation and realise you didn't even recorded it, you know. You know, you get those kind of things that go wrong. But actually, if we got more feedback from people, we would probably take it very seriously. And we wouldn't change the core of what we're about, but we would probably try and think more about the kind of content that people wanted. So I think there's a balance point there, and I'm saying that really as a challenge to all of us, because if we just do it because we're comfortable all the time and we don't take that feedback, then we'll become part of that dwindling long tail, and someone else's podcast will do it better. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, I think there's still a chance that we can not only be doing something with passion and for enjoyment, but we can actually be relevant and reach people where we want to reach.
I think the beauty with Edu Talk recently has been that I think people can maybe, hopefully folk can sense the passion that John has for kind of technology and his background as a primary teacher and you know, for myself, and just continually queuing up, you know, guests for the Wednesday live shows. And you know, there's times where we're busy elsewhere and have to go to a pre-record, but you know, pre-records are usually good quality as well, taking time maybe to edit them a little bit. So I think that passion is there, and John and I have had some good ding-dongs and conversations over the last year, but you know, very often, and we've had some fantastic debates, but that's something I think we need to go back to. If, you know, using Skype conference calls, we could have, you know, 5-6 wee debates, and we had some terrible technical problems that I think annoyed a few folk when we first tried that out, because we didn't appreciate, you know, with a Wi-Fi connection and 6 or 7 on a Skype call, you were just asking for trouble, particularly if they were all trying to speak at the same time. But I think people know that John and I are passionate, and I think I would imagine that they would know that on a Wednesday night at 8 o'clock when they tune in, they may get talked to for 10-15 minutes by an expert that's coming on, but they will be so passionate about what they've written or produced that they're actually willing to stand up and go live on air and take the criticisms or the points through Twitter or email. So I think that there is just a lot of energy every time that we broadcast live, and part of that will be through the nervousness of us all when it's going to collapse, going to run out of Skype credit at some point.
I think it's worth
it. Did that last week, actually, yeah.
Has that happened? Bit cold, yeah?
Yeah.
We haven't done that yet, but I have often had, when we've Skyped out, place to bring someone in on the telephone, that we've gone down as low as 50 pence or something left in the account. Yeah. I feel it's all from 1945 watching the meter.
Sort of the meter, yes. I was just going to say that, Matthew, I think it's worth mentioning that, you know, beyond the qualities of passion and enthusiasm, but we did set off with a kind of platform, didn't we? A very broad platform. But basically, we think that, you know, the education system is not working. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, it's not a socially just system in the way that it could be and ought to be. You know, there's not enough excitement around learning. And so we kind of wanted a platform, really, to explore that and try and, I suppose, do a bit of persuasion. And we used the kind of the Demers report, didn't we, the treasure as a kind of, I suppose, it's just a very broad organising framework, you know, so that we're not kind of aimlessly riffing. There is a sort of hopefully a persuasive element to it.
I love that excuse. That's great. So we're not aimlessly riffing, everyone. It's all very planned. But you're absolutely right, Steve. You know, it may not be obvious as people listen to us, but essentially we see ourselves as a campaigning podcast. We try to do it with a light touch whenever we can, but essentially what we try and do is take whatever story or guest and weave them into that story of how is education evolving, and you know, why are the levers so difficult to press, you know, and why is the system not yet, for example, taking enough cognizance of what young people actually want? You know, has the system become too much self-driven, you know, and self-feeding? So these are the kind of things that every time we revisit the treasure within, and we do from time to time talk about it again, and we find, you know, the world doesn't yet match the Dolores vision, and therefore we still have a purpose for bumping our gums.
And that's great that you're happy to be up front about that. But I'm just wondering, with your experience, and you know, people can see, it's very easy to browse the guests that you've had on and listen to what you've said to, kind of down the shows and down the years. But do you feel that, I mean, do people come to you, do governments or authorities come to you and say, well, you're the guys behind Inside Learning, you know, you must know what you're talking about, you've got more knowledge than many of us, can we pull you into a working group or get your advice off of something, or can you give us an idea about who we should go to speak to on this topic?
The did see the governments come to us, David. Cheap, did you, David?
Yeah, no, that's cheap for your own country.
Sorry, just pick myself up.
We had to talk Clinton back in the early days. We just felt we didn't have the capacity at that time to deal with them.
I think we'd probably be what Mr. Gove would probably be called, what he labelled the blob. I think we fall under the blob at the moment. So, I mean, there were time was when there. When we certainly, I mean, when the previous life, I did talk to the department in England, but no, I think again, it comes back to, you know, we're lobbying this thing out here, and we're never sure who's listening.
Does that happen to you guys? Do you get that kind of sense of influence?
I would never say there's any influence, but who knows? I mean, we don't have any formal relationship at all with, for example, Education Scotland and the General Teaching Council, but with Scotland being a relatively small country, you know, we've had many guests from both those organisations on the show, and, you know, there's never any problem, never any animosity. If something appears on the Education Scotland website, maybe it's to do with GLO or a report on technology, you know, John will immediately be interested. For myself, if it's, you know, maybe to do with social inclusion or some kind of package that's going to, resources that's going to support an area of the curriculum, most of the time we drop the people an email, and they probably know of them or know them already, and even was just again through conferences and learning festivals and such. You know, most of the time they will come on. So, you know, there's no doubt that the many civil servants and people in these national education bodies are aware of EduTalk, that several of their colleagues will have been on before, and I think that snowball's too strong a phrase, but, you know, I think that will continue to be the case. We don't. You know, we're clear that we're very excited about technology and what John labels guerrilla podcasting, but I think it probably comes across fairly clearly about where John and I kind of stand and various big issues in life, but that's never been, there's never been a sense that that's put folk off from engaging with us at all. So I think as time goes on, we'll continue to, you know, be welcome to broadcast live or record stuff at various education bodies conferences and get the key experts from some of these organisations to appear live. And again, that's very brave if you're under certain kind of civil service rules, or, you know, you're working for one of these bodies, to actually put yourself up in a live show. You know, nobody's ever been abused or anything like that, or heavily criticised, but you know, they're willing to take. But the other thing I've not mentioned is that occasionally we'll invite folk to Skype in and actually join in the conversation, so they don't quite know what they're getting themselves into. But as far as, in terms of influence, I would never go as far as to say that. You know, certainly no examples of where that's happened.
Two quick thoughts. So the first one is that the list of your ex-guests who have now been moved out of Education Scotland is quite extensive. I hadn't put two together until this moment, David, but it's becoming clear. With what you're saying, I'm not certain that we can know the influence, but I know that there are many times when I'll be at a conference or a meeting, and people will say, you know, yes, I've listened to the podcast, interested in such and such an episode. You know, so there is influence there, but there's no sense of there's no sense of us being a body. You know, so people don't come to Inside Learning. So I suspect there might be a community out there that maybe occasionally converse about or know about what we do. And I'm particularly interested in how much that community overlaps between our two podcasts, for example. That, you know, wouldn't it be a shame if we had like half the same community and we didn't really know it or talk about it? But you know, maybe that's something that we should think about more. You know, is the possibility that we have influence over Steve and I. That's a fair, we would like to have influence because we're good beliefs about the world, you know, but
there's a difference between the shows. I think, sorry for cutting across you, but I think you guys are front and centre, you know, centre stage for your shows. They're certainly ones that I've listened to, and it's very conversational, and you're bringing in guests and such like. But this is a bit of an admission, I suppose, for me, but with the role that I've been in school in the last few months, you know, in terms of taking to the airwaves, I don't have much to say at this present time. And Twitter, you know, my kind of focus has changed as well. So I'm, my commitment is to get fantastic guests on that John and I can listen to and have a great chat with and learn from, as well as sharing our learning and sharing just through the broadcast. But that's where I'm at the moment, and I think possibly see myself in the months to come. Would I be right in saying that? That we, you know, you guys are maybe would be more famous for being the guys that are the presenters, the kind of the star attraction in Inside Learning.
Well, I think you can immediately turn the other's head and say perhaps you've got a more thoughtful approach, and that you're more anxious to let the guests be, you know, to be the subject. Whereas, you know, if I'm being really frank, Steve and I try and be thoughtful and we try to be, you know, informed. But I don't doubt that there's a bit of ego in there, that we don't separate out as much as we perhaps should. Perhaps in a desire to be slightly entertaining. I don't know, Steve. What do you think?
No, I think it's a fair point, Matthew. Sometimes, I mean, we try not to take ourselves too seriously, but at the same time, be serious. Was it an old Buddhist saying about, you know, never take yourself so seriously, but always live your life as though it is serious?
I don't know that one, but it sounds very interesting.
Yeah, something around those lines. Basically, what I was saying, we try not to take ourselves too seriously, but I think you're right, Matthew. I mean, we are strongly opinionated, aren't we? And we do like to flog our opinions sometimes.
I think we would irritate us if we were listening to the podcast.
Yes.
I don't think so, to tell you the truth. I mean, at the moment, you're the only... I listen to a lot of podcasts, but you're the only educational podcast, other than folk that put stuff on EduTalk that I listen to nearly all the time.
It's good to hear. Very kind.
And part of it, I think, is, and one of the reasons, is a lot of the other podcasts I listen to now are conversations. It's, you know, the sort of, I listen to a lot of tech podcasts, and they seem to have gone for this pattern of having one or two people plus a guest. It seems to be a really good format, I think, for a podcast, as opposed to somebody just sitting behind a mic and talking. And to get back to what we were talking earlier, I think part of that is the sort of spontaneity, the serendipity that comes in, which makes it interesting and makes it listenable to.
I wonder how many of these podcasts you and I listen to in common, because I consume the tech podcasts all week to an alarming extent, things like This Week in Tech and various things like that. I don't know if you ever listen to those.
I'm more of a Mac, Darren Fireball, and...
Do you want Mac Break Weekly?
Nope, it's not. I think I've listened to it an odd time, but I think there's so many of these things out there that I listen quite a lot on the 5x5 network.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, my favourite photographer is running a podcast on that now. Bill Wardman.
Right.
Portrait photographer, they do on taking pictures.
Right.
Should they just join 5x5?
Uh-huh.
And then, but anyway, there's two things I just want to quickly grab there from that as well, John. The first thing is that... I like you, have noticed that pattern that it has settled down to being less about having constantly changing panels, but instead usually two, three or four people that become the kind of permanent members who bring in others occasionally to refresh and to, you know, to cover news stories or whatever. But I started to realise that I'm listening to these people week in and week out, and they become my friends.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't know me if they passed me in the street, but I've got a sense that, you know, that one of the things that keeps me listening to this podcast is my own social drives. I feel as if I'm part of the wee club.
Yeah.
And I wonder if subconsciously, Steve, you know, I've never really spoken much about that, but I wonder if I've subconsciously picked that up and have become relaxed with the idea that you know, although I'm not sure we really, you know, I'm not sure any two or three people can ever really sustain that level of interest. Then maybe I felt as if it's important that we become like friends to people, which is an interesting thought. The other thing I was going to say there about that is that the 5x5 network, and there was a podcast Photocast Network, if you listen to photography podcasts, which I used to a lot, they're typical of that kind of long tail thing. I think a lot of people in podcast areas that are specialised start to realise that we're not ever in competition with each other. You know, and that actually the there's a lot of worth in having a network that allows you to have a web page that, you know, does mutual promotion, and you can share some of the audience and build up a sense of shared excitement around what you do while still keeping the individual identity. And the obvious question is there one in the UK? I'm not sure I know of one.
Well, not quite, but Edutalk, the idea is that it gives people an easy entry to podcasting and perhaps a bit more of an audience, because if you use Audioboo, for instance, and tag it Edutalk, it gets automatically posted to our site. Or if you use iPadio to record something and again tag it Edutalk, it gets posted to our site. And several of the contributors, Ian Guest, who was doing a podcast anyway on Audioboo, he just hashtags everything Edutalk, so it goes on our site. Nick Hood, the physics teacher in Scotland, who has some great booze, does the same. A guy, Alan Donoghue, who's a computing teacher in England, also contributes. So one of our ideas was to have a sort of hub that people could post their podcast to, and try and kind of get this shared audience.
Mm-hmm. I remember, John, about a year and a half ago, and we were talking to some acquaintances of ours who were involved in a conference organising company, talking about recording or even broadcasting live, and them having kind of their own wee channel. Obviously nothing would be paid for, and that company actually kind of moved out of the education sector eventually, we tried it out once or twice, and then now we've got the Scottish Residential Childcare Workers Association, and they're keen to record discussions and panels and such like. And it's that thing, I don't know if you guys have got into that inside Lena at all, but it's that these kind of partnerships, and I see it more in workplace, it's all about partnership working now. And what we've got with the Residential Childcare Network is just being able to know that there's the expertise, they know that the machine that I'm turning up to their event with will have one of John's favourite tools, Nicecast, installed on it. So the option there is, if everybody agrees, is to do a live broadcast or record and then edit and let everybody have a listen back before it goes on to Edutalk, and then cross posting it onto their own website. And I think John, you've spoken to a few individuals as well as maybe organisations who, we're saying very clearly to them, it's no effort at all for you to set up your own channel or a regular podcast, and you can put it through Edutalk and you might get a bit of a degree of listenership, and obviously you're free to put the audio on your own site.
Yeah. It's a really good idea. It's like a YouTube parallel there, isn't there, in what you're doing?
Well, I think it goes along. I mean, you were saying 5 by 5, the UK one was 70 Decibels was a podcast network, which is actually just joined up with 5 by 5, and there was a London based, I think the guy who runs it came from London, podcast network. But I think that's quite a good idea, because again, as you were saying, there's not a competition going on here. It's not as if
people, it's not a zero sum game, is it?
People who listen to podcasts, and what we should be trying to do is say it's dead easy and it's worthwhile listening to podcasts, and this is a way to do it. And again, it's dead easy to create a podcast, and we'll give you a space to do that. And with the actual radio, I'd be delighted if somebody wanted to pick up the mic and have a show anytime they like, really. With the right software, folk could join in and have their own spot, because on Radio Edutalk, it is streaming our 1,000-odd bits of audio that we've collected over the last couple of years from different folk.
It's a fair line.
I love that, yeah. Was it you, David, or John, who used the term guerrilla podcasting? I love that.
I like the idea with the Lennon Festival that, all these people would go in with their phones and phone in a report. But yeah, because the server's basically sitting there, or the service that's running Edutalk, and most of the time it's just churning out our backlist, or all the stuff that people have submitted over the years, I would be delighted if somebody said, "Oh right, I would like a shot. I'd like to do a Tuesday spot or whatever, or even a one-off." That would be great to get other people.
I think it's a really exciting service, and I understood that actually. You know, I've listened to a few of the podcasts, and I didn't. You know, I was puzzled a few times because I could see that there were different, different sizes and lengths of clips, and I could see that you were curating something, but I didn't realise it was such a, such a sort of centrally stated aim. I guess that's something I think is a great service to schools and teachers that want to get into this.
It started off. We used the Posterous service, which was just wonderful, but it was bought over by Twitter and decommissioned, I guess, so we've had to move. But what was wonderful about that is we could automatically, well, I had a few wee scripts that would sort of troll Audioboo and troll Ipadio and post stuff automatically, and they also had an email address. So at that point, if you sent any email to edutalk@posterous.com with an audio file on it, it would go onto our site, so it made it really easy for people to join in. With the new one, if you send, and nobody's tried this yet because we've just moved, but if you send anything to, I think it's on the site anyway, audio@edutalk.cc, it'll have to be manually posted, but I'm quite happy to pop that on. But people can pick up Audioboo, pick up Ipadio, and there's free software for Android and iPhones. You can upload files to Audioboo from your desktop and just tag it Edutalk, it gets picked up. And I kind of like that idea of, I mean, we will moderate in the sense that if it's Florida timeshare spam, we will delete it. But if you're talking about education, and as long as, you know, it's not... wouldn't be interested in people selling, but as long as you're not, you know... Any views are welcome, I think. In the audio format.
You're making me wonder whether for one of our future collaborations, presuming you're up for doing this again, maybe we should just focus on the technicalities of how we produce podcasts. And you know, I know over the years I've read various items online saying there's nothing easier than doing a podcast, but you go and try and then you run into all sorts of little technical problems you didn't expect. Maybe quite good for us to share our experiences on that. Not just now, obviously, but in our program.
Certainly, that'd be great. I mean, that's one of the things that I've had in the back of my mind to talk about today. I think we're about a quarter of the way through your list, Matthew.
So, yeah, we chatted earlier. We should share with the listeners. He said, if we run out of conversation and podcasting, we've got any news items.
Little did he know.
Well, out of that list, I suppose we must be getting quite close to closing off time. I think we just crossed an hour, haven't we?
We have, and that's probably pushing people's patience for a while, and it'll go.
Are there any big questions we need to quickly touch on to tie this up? I suppose maybe we should have a future-focused one. Yeah, where is this going next? What's everyone's vision? Maybe that would be a good question, do you think?
Yeah, that'd be a good question.
David, you're the guy that quite possibly was there first. I'm resisting the temptation to check our back episodes to see whether it was 2005 or not, but we'll try not to care.
So, in terms of podcasting, then?
Yeah, where do you see it going? Yeah. You know, once it all does shape. Is it Highlander, or is it a long tail, or is it something completely different?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I go on a lot about speaking to people, you know, within, living quite close to Edinburgh, it's easy to go over and catch up with folk and trade unions and, you know, the General Teaching Council of Government and organisations like that. And, you know, we've got the big agendas, haven't we, in Scotland, with professional update and the new standards and new systems of, you know, professional review and development. And there maybe is a place, I think, when folk maybe feel that there's going to be a bit more kind of onus on them, or a bit more questions, maybe that's not right, that they're going to have to account for their CPD more. But people are not going to be able to, I would imagine, spend more money on it, and authorities will struggle to spend more money facilitating CPD. Then, you know, will people just come across it in their own volition, or will it be the case that the powers that be will come across good quality educational podcasts and say to folk, you know, here's one way to cover it and a way that's not too painful for you in terms of using up resources. Of course, if they go down that route, that might be enough to put folk off. So, you know, I just think we should all keep doing what we're doing and just make it. I believe in, you know, my doubts about the Masters level CPD agenda. I think first and foremost it's got to be excellent CPD or excellent networking or you know, really deep accessible, but deep but nonetheless accessible in terms of time and location conversations and just opportunities to talk about the big issues that are out there. And I think if podcasting can be part of all of this, then it certainly has a future, maybe a more relevant future.
And if the Cabinet Secretary in Scotland or Michael Gove handed us a regular stipend and said you've now become our official CPD arm, do you think that would kill us? It would become like who was it that blogged? Do you remember, Johnson? Who blogged about the creepy treehouse effect?
That's for kids. No, I think the first person I heard using that term was Ewan McIntosh. And I think it's the idea that as teachers we can build something for the cool kids and they will come, you know, that you, and it's a creepy treehouse. It's somewhere that children don't naturally want to go.
They mistrust it because it's been set up, buddy trap or something. So we'd maybe better just following our passion, being open to, you know, to making it better. But you know, if we became official, we would suddenly look as if we had no credibility anymore.
Yeah, but I think Mike Russell would be a fantastic guest.
Do you know what, I've been thinking a lot recently about inviting him and just making, I mean, one thing about inside learning, I guess from what I've heard you guys are very similar, you know, we're not hardballers, we don't believe that getting people on and grilling them and trying to catch them out gets the best out of them. You know, if Mike was up for coming on and just chatting about his future vision, well, not a political one, but maybe 20 years hence, how does he see education coming up? He'd be a good guest, I think. You're right, you must think about these things.
I mean, he's just got no fear of new technologies at all. I think he would be very comfortable, so it's been a bit back of my mind for a while, so maybe if he'd be joining forces it'll be
more likely
to get one.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you've got Michael over in tea and for tea on Sunday, Steve. You could maybe ask him to join in.
Yes.
John, how about yourself then? How do you see it panning out?
Well, how I see it panning out, I don't know. I remember back in 2005 when the first sort of Scottish Edublogs explosion happened. I thought in 3 or 4 years every teacher in Scotland would be blogging and sharing their practice and commenting each other, and that didn't prove to be a particularly accurate belief. What I would like to do, I think, is just give more people the opportunity not only to listen to podcasts but to have a voice. Again, this week I was talking to a teacher about some of our practice in school, and collating sort of stuff that our kids had done, and I said, do you mind if I record a wee bit of this, and expecting about 5 minutes or so, and I ended up with half an hour of just this fantastic audio from a really engaged and passionate practitioner. I don't mean that in a sort of a patronising way, just a great person to chat to, and hopefully I'm going to punt it out once I've edited it a wee bit on EduTalk, as well as use it in my day job. And I think that the people really do like talking about what they're doing and listening, and just trying to facilitate that a wee bit better, trying to take it away from the idea that it's only for the sort of geekier among us. I mean, I like my geek. I like the
the stuff that goes on behind it, like RSS and stuff like that. But you don't need to like that stuff to load some things onto your phone and listen to it. Mm.
That is still a problem, John, isn't it? You know, that although although we're saying it should just be as simple as listening to music on your iPod or just listen to a radio program, the truth is that if you're not geeky, it still is. You know, there's a new landing curve there, and that's in our way, isn't it? That's holding us back. Mm-hmm. Lots of people I know don't even know that their Android phones, for example, can have a podcast app on it.
Yeah,
that's a worry.
It's, if you see just phones generally, lots and lots of teachers, I go into staff rooms in all sorts of schools, and I'd say 50% of them have a smartphone out in the short tea break that they have. And I don't see much evidence of that transferring to the classroom. You know, you've got this piece of technology in your pocket that is a camera, a movie camera, a recorder, this or that, the next thing, you know. Yeah, just everything. I mean, I remember the first my last day in school, I got my first iPhone, so I got the kids out into the park next door with a GPS app trying to draw shapes on the grass that we could then trace on Google Maps, and that is very geeky, but it just was the first thing I thought of when I got this. It was like, it's such a resource, and we've got these computers in our pockets now. The last thing we should be doing is making phone calls. We should be phoning in our thoughts or listening to other people's, maybe.
Yeah. Steve?
Yeah, no, I think there's certainly a future, and I was just thinking, particularly from coming in the English context, you know, and I see so many young teachers now who just feel passionate about teaching. They want to be in teaching, they want to be in education, but the whole thing is just driven by so much performativity, and I think people are hungry for ideas. You know, why did I come into teaching? There must be something more to this than kind of driving the system so hard that it's just failing. So I think there's wherever people can get ideas and some sort of release or some spark of enthusiasm from. So I think podcasts is certainly going to help in that respect. And I was just thinking about, we had a fantastic guest on, didn't we, a couple of weeks back, a primary head teacher in England, Louisa. I mean, she didn't know anything about podcasting.
No, she was a super guest, right? Yeah.
See, what drew her is the ideas, the need to talk about ideas, the need to talk about her work and, you know, what she's doing. So I guess if we can ignite the ideas, then we can draw people to the technology through that. Some people are drawn through the technology because that's their interest, but other people will kind of hopefully be drawn to the ideas. So yeah, I think there's certainly a place for podcasts and a thousand flowers that the podcasting is part of.
Sounds like a really good place to wrap up, I think. And it's about 12 minutes past 9 now, so we've
And Joyce would be well asleep. We've got a regular listener who goes to sleep to our podcast. So.
It may be our only social service, but we're proud of it.
We are proud of it, Joyce.
So I think we definitely are on for another one.
Next would love session. To do that. Would be great.
That would be really good to do this even on an occasional basis or something like that, and maybe talk about education rather than podcasting next time, you know. No, well, maybe not, maybe we've got one more podcasting one in our bag. I think it would be interesting to delve into how you do it technically, and vice versa, and
I think it'd be a good idea.
Yeah, fantastic. And just speaking for myself, I don't know about you, Steve. I found this really therapeutic, actually. You know, it's great to connect with other podcasters because we simply don't. And I suspect you guys, because of the nature of your work with the network that you're running, do speak to other people that are dabbling with podcasting. We don't. In some ways, we're maybe a little insular in that regard. So thank you for inviting this conversation, and thanks for making this so pleasant.
I think the thanks are all mutual tonight. That was super, and I think we'll say good night, folks, and I'll hang up Nicecast.
Good night.